It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from beautiful overcast Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 40 degrees out at the airport. They have calm winds, 10 miles of visibility. They're talking about a 30% chance of rain after 3 p.m. They're also talking about mostly sunny skies sometime today with a high near 43. Coming up on the Midday Report, the governor would like to pay higher permanent fund dividends and borrow some money to pay for capital projects. The Senate could vote this week on legislation that would rewrite the PFD formula. And Don Young has a new challenger. Those stories, plus one about a nationwide organization that's trying to foster a positive debate, this time about the quality of education in Alaska.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The U.S. and its allies in NATO are girding themselves for what's to come now that Russia has begun to invade Ukraine. President Biden says Russian leader Vladimir Putin's actions violate Ukraine's right to exist and violate international law.
Yesterday, Vladimir Putin recognized two regions of Ukraine as independent states. And he bizarrely asserted that these regions are no longer part of Ukraine and their sovereign territory. To put it simply, Russia just announced that it is carving out a big chunk of Ukraine.
NPR's Jackie Northam reports the president is now ordering major economic sanctions against Russia's financial firms and wealthy elite who back Putin.
He made clear that they're going to keep an eye on, there's going to be more if Russia keeps pushing ahead into Ukraine, trying to take more territory, then they are going to come back and they're going to put even more stringent sanctions on top of that. That could be, again, the two biggest banks, which are VRB and Sberbank. They could start moving towards oil and gas development in Russia as well, which of course is sort of the cash cow for the Russian economy.
Germany's halted a major gas pipeline deal with Russia. President Biden says there will be no U.S. troops in Ukraine, but NPR's Greg Myrie says Washington's pledging other military reinforcements.
He said the U.S. would continue to give military assistance to the Ukrainians, as it's been doing, and to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars in the past year or so. He also said the U.S. would move more equipment, military equipment, to the Baltics. Now, these are three former Soviet republics that are now members of NATO, and he stressed these would be entirely defensive moves, but there is this military component.
All major market indices are down more than 1% or 1 to 1.5%. NPR Scott Horsley is watching the numbers.
Already high crude oil prices climbed even higher after what President Biden called the beginning of a Russian invasion of Ukraine. The president says he's taking steps to limit pain at the gas pump, but warned consumers that defending freedom will have cost. Natural gas prices also rose as Germany said it would not give the green light for a new gas pipeline from Russia to begin operation in the current environment.
In other news, a Georgia jury has found three men guilty on all counts in their federal hate crimes trial for Ahmaud Arbery's 2020 murder. NPR's Kerry Johnson has Attorney General Merrick Garland's reaction today.
The Attorney General says Ahmaud Arbery's family should not be facing the second anniversary of his death this week. Merrick Garland says the three white men who chased and killed Arbery acted because he was black.
Hate crimes have a singular impact because of the terror and fear that they inflict on entire communities.
Garland says no one should fear attack because of what they look like or how they worship. He says the DOJ will fulfill its legal obligation to prosecute hate crimes and that Americans have a moral obligation to fight hatred and bigotry.
It's NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Governor Mike Dunleavy says higher state revenue and inflation mean that the legislature should pass his proposals to pay higher permanent fund dividends and to borrow money to pay for capital projects.
We can certainly afford a PFD that the people of Alaska expect, and given the inflationary rates, inflationary picture that we're going through right now, I think we're gonna really ask the legislature to give that due consideration as soon as possible.
The state has increased its forecast for oil and investment revenue. According to the new forecast, there will be roughly $1.5 billion in surplus over the next year and a half. Dunleavy wants the state to issue $325 million in bonds to pay for construction on ports, airports, fire halls, and other projects. The Kodiak Fire Hall is one of those projects. Dunleavy has proposed a PFD of roughly $2,500 based on using half the state's annual draw from the permanent fund. He also proposed an additional $1,200 dividend payment, which is the difference between the 2021 PFD and an amount Dunleavy proposed then. He says the PFD could help Alaskans deal with inflation. He also says it would be good to borrow now, since interest rates are low and could go up. Some legislative leaders have questioned whether higher dividends are sustainable, and they have raised concerns that the state shouldn't borrow for projects that it could pay for as part of an annual budget. The state Senate could be voting as soon as next week on legislation that would rewrite the formula, setting the amounts for permanent fund dividends. A key legislative committee considered two bills on Monday that would set the PFDs at a lower level than the $2,500 Governor Mike Dunleavy has proposed. His proposal is based on setting dividends at half the annual amount the legislature draws from the permanent fund. But at least some members of the Senate Finance Committee are concerned that that wouldn't be sustainable. Sitka Republican Senator Bert Stedman says it just doesn't add up.
There's only so much money. We don't have a printing press like they do in Washington, D.C.
Instead, the committee considered a proposal that would set the dividend at one quarter of the annual draw, or roughly $1,250. It's similar to a bill the Senate passed in 2017. The House had passed a different version of the bill, which would have set dividends at one third of the draw, and the two chambers couldn't agree on a compromise at the time. Another bill would set dividends at the level proposed by Dunleavy, beginning in the fall of 2024. But under that bill, it would only happen if there were new laws that raised taxes and fees by $700 million. It's similar to a bill the Senate briefly considered in September. The Senate Finance Committee is aiming to pass one or both bills this week, setting up debate by the entire Senate next week. The governor's proposal would lead the state to spend more than it brings in, if it doesn't make other policy changes, according to a nonpartisan analysis. And that gap would grow if inflation drives up state spending, or if the capital budget increases to pay for maintenance that has been put off. Anchorage Republican Natasha von Imhoff says the legislature shouldn't count on high oil prices. She recently announced she isn't running for re-election.
Just like you don't build a church for attendance on Christmas and Easter, you don't pass a dividend bill based on $90 in oil. We need to find something that's sustainable and affordable over time.
Some Alaskans who called in to testify against the bill said they support larger dividends. Magnus Sampson in Dillingham was one of those.
We've been calling and calling and calling for the past how many years now? Do you guys listen? Or you guys got cotton swabs in your ears?
The rising price of oil has increased state revenue forecasts since Dunleavy made his latest PFD proposal last spring. Alaska Congressman Don Young has a new challenger. Anchorage Assemblymember Chris Constant announced on Thursday he's running as an alternative to the, quote, extreme divisive agenda, close quote, in the country. He says he's seen examples of it at recent assembly meetings.
The yellow stars and the gay slurs and the endless hours of extremist arguments and the denial of the pandemic and, you know, what was really the first time I've ever seen social Darwinism kind of demanded by members of the public, like, just let people die. But that was not something that I could support, and it was quite shocking to witness.
Constant is a real estate agent and has represented downtown on the Anchorage Assembly for 5 years. He's running as a Democrat, a fact he did not emphasize at his launch event or mention in a campaign news release. Young, a Republican, has vanquished all challengers since 1973, since Constant was an infant. Other candidates this year include Greg Brelsford, an independent, and Nicholas Begich III, a Republican running to Young's right. Begich recently criticized the incumbent for requiring his congressional staff to be vaccinated against COVID-19, a policy that does not play well with right-wing conservatives. Constant is aiming more toward the political middle.
We're already seeing Mr. Young and Mr. Begich kind of going after each other. And I have to say, I fall in Mr. Young's camp there. I believe, though, that the voters are wanting to see a different debate.
Constant says he favors oil development in Alaska until the economy can rely more on renewables. He's also said he's more comfortable with production from the National Petroleum Reserve than he is with drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. A nationwide organization that's trying to heal America's political polarization is sponsoring a virtual debate tonight about the quality of education in Alaska. The organization, called Braver Angels, is holding online events around the country in an effort to get conservatives and progressives to talk with each other instead of talking at each other. KUAC's Tim Ellis has this report.
Braver Angels was established by a bipartisan group after the hyper-partisan 2016 election. The organization's name comes from President Abraham Lincoln's first inaugural address when he called upon Americans to summon their better angels to stop the march to what became known as the Civil War. Now, Braver Angels asks us just to talk with each other.
I think they concluded it really does take bravery to speak out right now.
Betsy Baker heads up the Alaska group affiliated with Braver Angels.
I think a lot of people are just really scared to even say anything to someone who they might not agree with. And it does take some courage to speak up and say, can we talk about that?
Baker is an Anchorage-based consultant on Arctic law and policy for the Washington, D.C.-based Wilson Center, and she volunteered for Alaska's Braver Angels group during the bitterly contested 2020 election. When it seemed the partisan divide between Republicans and Democrats had grown so wide that politicians on both sides couldn't even talk about their differences.
The basic idea of the organization is to get people speaking across the political divide, red, blue, anything in between or beyond, and to do it respectfully, sort of recreating, rebuilding civil discourse about our democracy.
Baker hopes some of that civil discourse will happen during tonight's virtual debate that'll feature two Fairbanks area members of a panel that'll consider whether public schools in Alaska are focused too much on teaching students what to think and not enough on teaching how to think. The panelists will include Fairbanks North Star Borough School District Board member Tim Doran and State Representative Mike Prox of North Pole. Also, Don Kogan, who works with a homeschooling program run by the Galena School District, and Tennessee Judkins, the director of Inupiaq Education for the North Slope Borough School District.
We wanted to look more broadly at what we think is a wonderfully unique education landscape in the state and just get the different perspectives that are represented on the panel, from homeschooling to sort of legislative concerns, to school board member, to indigenous cultures and different Alaska Native approaches.
And because Braver Angels tries to promote dialogue, Baker says the debate organizers also will encourage everyone who's logged on to the Zoom virtual meeting to offer their thoughts about Alaska's educational system. Anyone interested in participating in the virtual meeting can register by going to the braverangels.org website and clicking on the Find an Event link. Or just go to this story on KUAC's news page at fm.kuac.org. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
In mid-January, heavy snow and rain caused some Juneau roofs to collapse. One of the hardest hit structures was a shared warehouse where Barnacle Foods stored 10,000 jars of kelp pickles, among other items. But as KTOO's Bridget Dowd reports, just over a month later, company owners say they were able to salvage more than they initially thought.
Stepping inside the main Barnacle Foods warehouse in Lemon Creek, I feel like I'm walking into a kitchen pantry. The smell of the herbs used to make the company's sauces and spices hit me all at once. A plastic curtain divides the commercial kitchen from shelves where pallets of merchandise are stored. On the very top shelf, there are cardboard boxes with the word collapse in thick black marker.
And everything that was not savable obviously didn't look like that, but we were able to dispose of it.
Barnacle Foods co-founder Leah Heifetz walks me out back.
This is where our warehouse used to stand.
The company rents space in an adjacent building where they usually store merchandise, extra production materials like caps and glass, as well as shipping supplies. But in mid-January, an employee was between the two buildings trying to open their outdoor freezers, which had iced over. Heifetz says that's when disaster struck.
He started to hear something happening in this building and felt something happening. It sounded like a big truck was coming around the corner or something. So he was looking over here like what's the grumbling?
At the time, Heifetz was upstairs across the way.
And I looked out this window, which is right where my office is, and just saw the whole thing level basically in seconds.
No employees were inside the building that collapsed and no one was injured, which was lucky because another employee had been in the building just a few minutes before it fell.
Our team took off a few days after that. A lot of people were pretty shaken up, and we also just want to give the building some space and our building some space. There was still a lot of rain coming down and still a lot of snow.
The collapse also put a hold on outgoing orders.
We have a fairly vibrant online business and are shipping out pallets of orders every few days. And we thought we lost a lot of product.
At first, they thought everything they'd stored in the building was lost, including a summer's worth of kelp pickles, which are only produced seasonally. But when the salvage crew started picking through the rubble, there was good news.
We were really pleasantly surprised that a lot of the product was completely untouched, and most of the items we were able to dry out and we'll be able to use.
What's left of the warehouse is now covered in plastic. Heifetz says they're just grateful to have understanding customers, a supportive community, and healthy employees.
We feel extremely lucky, and this could have been a much, much harder hit on our business, and we're doing relatively just fine. Everyone is safe, and the items that we had to get rid of are replaceable.
For now, Barnacle Foods has moved its extra product into another storage space, and the future of the old building is still uncertain. In Juneau, I'm Bridget Dowd.
A former Fairbanks resident is back in town as part of an upcoming Aurora Research rocket mission at the University of Alaska Fairbanks-operated Poker Flat Launch Facility. KUAC's Dan Bross has this report.
Riley Troyer is a West Valley High School and University of Alaska Fairbanks graduate who's now a PhD candidate and graduate research assistant at the University of Iowa, where he's studying the Aurora.
Having moved away from Fairbanks, it's really nice to be studying something that kind of constantly is reminding me of home and allows me to sort of keep that link I have to Alaska.
Troyer is working on what's known as the LAMP, or Loss Through Auroral Microburst Pulsations mission, which aims to better understand the phenomenon of pulsating aurora.
Pulsating aurora are a very common but often overlooked type of aurora, and that's because they are usually just barely visible to the naked eye and look like these patches of aurora that pulse on and off across often wide portions of the sky.
According to the LAMP mission website, pulsating aurora could be a, quote, significant source of energy that gets transferred from space to Earth, unquote. Troyer says the plan is to launch a rocket into a pulsating aurora to gather data.
Measure the electrons, which are colliding with the molecules in the atmosphere and producing the light we see as the aurora. So the rocket will be measuring the energy of these electrons.
The data will be combined with images captured by cameras on the ground, an aspect of the mission Troyer says the public can help with.
Get observations from many different people, more than just the few scientists that are part of the mission.
Troyer says even cell phone photos and videos can be processed to provide valuable information.
Even though the picture might not look great to you know, the human eye might not be the best artistic piece. It can still have a lot of scientific merit.
There's a LAMP mission website and a Twitter page where people can find out more about the NASA-funded mission. There's also a citizen science page, aurorasaurus.org. The rocket launch window is February 24th through March 10th, centered around the new moon when darkness will provide the best chance to see pulsating aurora. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Insight Daily Radio.
Mother of invention. How good ideas get ignored in an economy built for men is a fascinating and eye-opening examination of business, technology, and innovation through a feminist lens. While we talk about the Iron Age and the Bronze Age, we might as well talk about the Ceramic Age or the Flax Age, since these technologies were just as important. But inventions associated with women are sadly not considered to be technology in the same way. We spoke with author Katrine Marsall about this fascinating new book.
I think we're not that used to thinking about how soft things like gender roles or ideas about men and women can kind of shift and even hold back these sort of very hard forces of the economy or technology. And what I try to show in the book is that they really do. And for example, the book starts with the example of the rolling suitcase, which is this classic mystery of innovation. How come that we managed to put two men on the moon before we put wheels on suitcases? And what I show in the book is that it actually had to do with gender bias. There was this idea that no man would ever roll a suitcase, and women were considered to be too small of a market. I mean, if a woman traveled, the assumption was she would do it with a man, not alone, and that man would then have to carry her suitcase for her, and hence we didn't need to have wheels on suitcases.
That's author Katrine Marsall on her latest book, Mother of Invention: How Good Ideas Get Ignored in an Economy Built for Men, which has just been released.
Insight Daily Radio.
A housing needs assessment survey is coming soon to Kodiak. Help your community by participating in the survey, which may come by mail or a phone call. Responses are anonymous and will be incorporated into a housing needs assessment document that will be available to the public. Those who complete the survey will be entered in a prize drawing happening each week in February. This message is sponsored by Kodiak Island Housing Authority.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the second day of February, the 22nd day of February, the year 2022. Happy Tuesday. It is 2/22/22. The sun rose today at 8:21. It'll set again at 6:25. That will give us 10 hours and 4 minutes of daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 52, set in 1944. And a record low is 3 degrees, set in 2002. Currently a balmy 40 degrees out at the airport. Calm winds, 30% chance of rain after 3 p.m. today, and mostly sunny skies otherwise with a high near 43. For tonight, rain, low around 38, southeast winds, light and variable, turning to the east to 10 to 15 this evening. And for tomorrow, more rain. Rain tomorrow could be heavy at times, high near 44 with east winds to 25. Your chance of precipitation tomorrow, 100%. In fact, we're talking about between 3/4 and 1 inch of the wet stuff coming down tomorrow. Tomorrow night, more rain. The rain could be heavy at times tomorrow night, too. And we've got a low around 39, warm conditions with southeast winds to 25 tomorrow night. Well, looking at our local tides, we just had a low tide here on the east side, on both sides of the island, actually. At 11:50, that occurred here on the east side and was 0.8 of a foot. Our next high tide will be at 5:54 p.m. and be 6.2 feet, followed by a low tide at 11:31 p.m. of 2 feet. Our morning low tide for the east side will, high tide for the east side will be at 6:01 a.m. and be 8.8 feet, followed by a low tide at 12:56 p.m. of 0.9 feet. Over on the west side, you just had a low tide at 12:16. That was a 1 foot tide. Your next high tide will be at 6:24 p.m. It'll be 11.1 feet, followed by a low tide at 12:04 a.m. of 3 feet. Your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 6:23 a.m. and be 13.8 feet, followed by a low tide at 11:19 p.m. of 1.3 feet in Larsen Bay. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory through Wednesday. Southwest winds to 15 today and seas to 11 feet. For tonight, southwest 25, seas to 10 feet. And for Wednesday, southeast 30, seas to 12 feet. For Thursday, they're calling for southeast 40, seas to 14 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning tonight and Wednesday. For today, southwest 20 and seas to 4 feet. For tonight in the Shelikof, south northeast 25, increasing to 35 after midnight, seas to 8 feet. For tomorrow, east 35, seas to 9 feet. And for Thursday, east 40, seas to 8 feet in the Shelikof. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a work session tonight. That's happening at 7:30 p.m. Public participation is both in-person and virtual. Public members are encouraged to tune in to KMXT on 100.1 FM. The meeting will be web-streamed, and the web-streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. For those wishing to request meeting materials or have questions regarding the meeting, please contact the City Clerk's office at 486-8636. The City Council will also be having a regular meeting on Thursday, also 7:30 p.m., with the same details. Packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. And again, the number for the clerk is 486-8636. Also tonight at 6 p.m. at the Bayside Fire Hall, Fire Protection Area Number 1 will be having their regular meeting. Again, that's at 6 p.m. tonight at the Bayside Fire Hall. Tomorrow, the Solid Waste Advisory Board will be having a meeting virtually. That's happening at 5:15 p.m., and you can see that on the Kodiak Island Borough's website. That's at www.kodiakak.us. And on Thursday at 6:30 p.m. on the Bayside Fire Hall, the Assembly will be having a work session. Again, that's Assembly work session Thursday, 6:30 p.m., Bayside Fire Hall. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a planning work session on Saturday. That meeting will begin at 9 a.m. Public participation is both in-person and virtual. Public members are encouraged to tune in to KMXT right here on 100.1 FM. The meeting will be web-streamed, and the web-streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. If you wish to request printed meeting materials or have any questions, contact the clerk, 486-8636. And the Kodiak History Museum's new exhibit is in its last few days of free observations through February 23rd, so tomorrow. That's called Making History Day by Day, Kodiak, Our Stories in the COVID-19 Pandemic. It's on view at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium at no cost through tomorrow only.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.